Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
All right, let's get to the true top story of the day, because that story's irrelevant, okay. As was your Oval story.
I'm sure, according to you. But what is the top story of the day, Mr. Jones?
I don't know. Do you want to talk about the single most talked about story?
Sure.
Or what do you want to do
there.
Here?
Let's start there. What's the single most talked about story?
You're kidding, right?
What's the single?
You're kidding?
What's the single most talked about story?
Wow. Okay. This is going to be a much longer show than I thought it was going to be. Patrick Chambers post-game talk, which is the talk of the country right now, because of what he said after the game.
I heard a bit of it with Inside Penn State Athletics a few minutes ago.
No, that
but
I didn't
obviously
really play
that's the, not the part you're talking about.
No, it's not the part. And it's about the officiating.
See, I hadn't heard that part of it.
You lead a sheltered life, man.
Well, that's not a big surprise to anybody that's listened to this program.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to have to explain the whole thing now. All right. Okay. Because Dan Dockage has weighed in on it. Jay Billis has weighed in on it. Tom Dienhart's weighed in on it. And you don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
I honestly don't. I'm obviously it's been a hot topic, but not in my circles.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that anybody listening is not aware of it, just because I'm not.
No. In all likelihood, he will be fined or suspended for what he said after the game. It dealt with a call with a minute and 50 seconds to go. It is a two-point game at this point. Penn State's got the ball. There was a rebound by Brandon Taylor. Gets it out. Geno Thorpe's on the move. Geno Thorpe is in the process. He hasn't quite lost it yet, but he's in the process of losing the basketball. And as he cuts inside of Jordan Dickerson, Evan Samotrich, who's on the other side of Dickerson, grabs Dickerson by the arm and throws him down. And the foul was called on Dickerson. And Dickerson gets up and looks around and goes, "What?" With this shocked look on his face. And it fouls Dickerson out of the game. It fouls him out of the game, which then changes the entire tone of the game. Now, let's at least go through here and explain. There are many ways in this scenario to win or lose a basketball game. Penn State, you know, DJ Newbill needed to hit all of his free throws down the stretch. He had 3 out of 4. He had a big miss. Newbill had a huge steal with about, I want to say, 20-plus seconds to go somewhere in there. Makes a heck of a defensive play. Goes down the court. Now, Pat has a timeout to use. And I realize there's some people that subscribe to, you know, because, you know, like they get all their basketball knowledge from Dick Vitale over the years and so forth. So you got to call a timeout. And it's not always the case. You don't always have to call a timeout even when you have it. Is it the safe thing to do? Yeah. But is it always the best basketball play to make? No. Because when you're on the move, guess what Maryland's doing? Okay. Maryland is backing up. And that's why, you know, he thought, you know, he had Newbill on Samotrich. He liked the matchup, which I did too. And then Newbill going too fast, lost the ball. Lost it. Steal right back, foul, whole thing. And then Newbill came down later and then he hit a 3. Made it a 1-point game. But that was a big play right there. So those are ways that Penn State could have won the game. They fell behind by you know, they had a 1-point lead at halftime. They actually had a 7-point lead in the first half. And Rashad Pack, who had only been one for his last 11 in threes, hit 2 threes down the stretch. And then, which is one of the, you know, you actually want him shooting it because he's not shooting the ball well. You want him shooting it. And he made it. You're like, hey, you got to be kidding me. And then Ross Travis hit 1 of 2 at the free throw line, so Penn State had a 1-point lead at the break. In the second half, Maryland came out and did everything right, and Penn State didn't play well to start the second half. Just did not play well. Defensive rotations were off, step off. Offensively, no real synergy, no sync, and they fell behind by 13. Then Pat called a timeout. He called one timeout, and then he called the second timeout. The second timeout was not about strategy. The second timeout was all about, hey, look, play hard, kick it into a gear, and stop floating around. Well, they did. They outscored Maryland 20-5 after that timeout and took a 2-point lead, 62-60. At that point, down the stretch, it goes back and forth, back and forth. So those are all areas that Penn State could have won this game on the floor. Now for the call itself. On the call itself, if it's a no call, to me that's barely acceptable, but all right, I can maybe go along with it. Does he miss the call completely? No question. I mean, the foul is... Okay, the only two things you can call there are a no call or a foul on Samatrich. The one thing it absolutely cannot be is a foul on Jordan Dickerson. Yet that was the call. They then went to the monitor after that call because I think someone felt there might be an elbow that Jake Layman threw into Brandon Taylor. I will be frank with you. I did not have a monitor view of it, and the ball was moving up the floor, so I never saw the play, so I never really could comment on that in the broadcast or now. I haven't seen it. But that's what the monitor review was about. The play also fouled Dickerson out. And it changed the entire tenor of the end of the game. Because suddenly, a guy that had been the great rim protector all night, he blocked 2 shots, and I'm not really sure how many he altered or changed as the game went. But suddenly, that presence was fouled out and on the bench. And what did Melo Trimble do, being the good point guard that he is? With the big guy out, he did the right thing, and he took it right to the rim. He got a foul, and he got 2 free throws out of it, which is smart basketball by him and smart basketball by Mark Turgeon. They have no control over what's called or not called. In the postgame, and I wish I had the comment here. I don't think I have it.
I have the quote, but not the audio part of it.
Well, I'd rather play the audio part of it. It's a little more effective because it's... I can tell you that he will be either fined or suspended for this.
But in watching the video of the incident, there's no way that foul is on anybody other than... What was it, 1? Is that the number?
Evan Samatrich.
Yeah. There's no way it's not on him.
Right. I mean, it's not even to be honest with you, it's not even a close call.
No. I mean, if I can see it, it's bad. I'll be quite honest with you.
If you look at the, especially somebody got a great shot of it end zone.
I'll put a link to it on our Facebook page so you can take a look at it. But it's a great shot. You're right.
And it's He was then asked about it after the game.
But there's absolutely no way that this is that foul should have been called on anybody other than him.
Well, yeah, right. Well,
I mean, you try and give the benefit of the doubt even to the official in some of these, but this one isn't even close. Well,
look, I mean, this is not, by the way, just so you know, there's no way, shape, form, in manner whatsoever. I'm going to get into a lot more of this. Going to have Rich Scarcella coming up in a few minutes. An official does not want to be in this position. They really do want to be in a position where they are. They want to be in a position where people are. Where they're trying to get it right. They're trying to get good grades from the conference office. They're trying to get more games down the stretch. They're trying to get conference tournament assignments. They're trying to get NCAA tournament assignments. You know, you got personal pride. Here's what Pat said, I believe. Let's see if we got this thing here right or not. Get it for you in just a few seconds here. That way you can hear exactly what he said after the game. But it's going to be one of the two. I've already been pretty much assured of that. But it is also, you know, again, I've already lined up for you all the ways Penn State could have won the game. And you don't know what happens after this. Maryland could have hit a couple threes, whatever. You don't know. Or Penn State could have. Penn State could have won the game. But here's Pat after the game.
The call that got... That was the worst call I've ever seen in my entire life. They're pulling Jordan Dickerson down. First of all, time and score. He's too young. He doesn't have a feel for the game. He shouldn't call that foul. That's one. Two is he back cut it. He went down the middle. He didn't even use the screen, and he got pulled down. And they called a foul on him? It makes no sense. And if I didn't complain, Newbill would have never got to the foul line. Because Trimble gets there 12 times, and he's a freshman, and he's on a road. It's a joke. It's a joke the way we're officiated. It's disappointing. And there was an elbow that they didn't want to call, they should have called, that normally gets called against us. Frustrating, disappointing. But we got to take the refs out of the game.
That's the comment. Now, realize that qualifying at Daytona may be more important to some, but that's the big story of the day. So, don't roll your eyes.
Don't slow down.
I agree with you. I mean, after looking at the video, you know, it seems pretty simple, and I can understand his his concern about the way it was called. How's that?
Well, no, I'll say it straight out. I'm glad he said something. I know it's going to cost him one way or the other. But, you know, every time you turn around, everybody's walking some diplomatic tightrope all the time. Well, every once in a while, you got to look around and say, you know, the heck with diplomacy. I've had enough. He's fighting for his program. He's fighting for his players. Every one of these coaches all the time. You know, Dave Paulson, we're going to have him at the top of the hour. You know, Dave just signed a contract extension and so forth, but he'll be the first to tell you every single season you're fighting for your job. All the time. This is your livelihood here. At the same time, Kelly Pfeiffer's the guy that made the call. Kelly Pfeiffer's also fighting for his livelihood. Do you think Kelly Pfeiffer wanted to get the call wrong? Of course he doesn't want to get the call wrong. That's why conspiracy theories, integrity, and so forth, you can't bring that in. That doesn't come to play. You have to have professional pride in what you're doing. Kelly Pfeiffer, I think, has a chance to be a really good official long term. Guy I've been working in the Big Sky. He's come over here, right? And, you know, guess what? He works hard, but he's also in the top 50 of games worked. And I get very concerned at this time of the year with the number of games guys have worked. There are already 10 guys this year that worked over 70 games.
You were talking about that issue last year.
Why is it the NCAA tournament is really beautifully officiated for the most part? Why? There are two reasons. Number one, you have the top guys, okay? And what's number two? They're done with their tournaments on Sunday, and they go to the NCAA tournament site 48 hours ahead of time. And what do? Sleep. Then they work a game on Thursday or Friday.
Fresh and rested.
Then they don't work. Then they don't work another game. They're ready. They're fresh. They're rested. It's all good. And that's what you worry about at this time of the year. If you're wondering how many games Kelly Pfeiffer's worth this year, he's worked 55. He's actually in the top 50 nationally in games worked. And again, do you think he wants to be in this position? Absolutely not. Do you think he absolutely wanted to get that call right? Of course he did. He has his own professional pride and integrity.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Patrick Chambers will find out whether it's a fine or a suspension for him after his comments following the Maryland game. But you know what? Good for him. He stood up for his program. He stood up for his team. Is it what the conference wants to hear? No. Is it what Rick Boyajis, who's the head of the officials, wants to hear? No. But at the same time, it was a big miss. Did it determine the outcome of the game? It played a role in the outcome of the game. But again, we don't know how the final minute and 50 seconds would go. Would Penn State have hit a couple of shots? Would Dickerson have made some plays? Would Des Wells hit a couple shots? You don't know. May still have been a three-point game. You don't know about that. But did it play a role in how it played out at the end? Yes, because suddenly Melo Trimble was going to the free throw line because there was no rim protector there. Jordan Dickerson had fouled out. So we bring in Rich Carcello. Rich, my good friend, it is always great to hear you.
Hey, Steve, how are you doing? Staying warm?
Yeah, stay warm. We've got an ash can in here. We're going to do this like Rocky Balboa in South Philly. It is cold out. All right, so you follow basketball religiously. You saw how everything played out. What were your thoughts as to how everything played out? Because, you know, obviously, there are things Penn State could have done to win the game. We know that, and that's been established. But what about that play?
Well, I think the video speaks for itself. I mean, I think it was just a horrendous call away from the play, number one. Number two, Dickerson clearly gets pulled down. And my point, I guess I said something on Twitter, and I elicited yesterday, and I elicited a lot of responses, but I do applaud Pat Chambers for standing up for his team and his staff, because I have seen enough games, not necessarily in person, but on TV, over the last 2 years, and to realize that there is not equitable treatment of Penn State when it plays other Big Ten teams. I'm not saying there's a conspiracy, not even suggesting that, because there isn't. But it's something what Pat said after the game, and I totally agree with him. It's time and situation and who you're playing, and they have not gotten their fair share of breaks over the last 2 years in big situations.
All right. It was influential in the game in that it was Jordan Dickerson, the one that fouled out.
My gut,
they may have found another way to win it, Maryland. I mean, Des Wells could have hit a three, whatever. You always had to understand that, you know, other things can happen. But the one thing I didn't think was going to happen was that if Dickerson were in there, that Melo Trimble would take it to the bucket on the next play.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And
I didn't mention that, but it was a big play considering Dickerson, you take him away from the middle. And obviously it affects Penn State and the way Penn State plays defense. And you're right. It doesn't mean that Maryland wouldn't have gone on to win the game. They had the lead at the time. That's not what I'm, not my point. My point
exactly.
is, it just seems when there's a big spot in a big moment, when there's a call made, and some of the calls are borderline and some of them are just flat bad, that Penn State and Pat Chambers have not gotten those, have not gotten an equal amount, let's just say that, or an equitable share of those calls with games on the line. You know, I don't cover the team, so I don't even know if Pat knows who I am, to tell you the truth. So I have no dog in this fight. But I'm just saying, what I've seen enough to know that it and it happens. It's, you know, why do you think Duke gets a lot of close calls in games late?
Right.
Because of Mike Krzyzewski and because of its reputation. It's just a natural thing. It's the way college basketball games are officiated. That doesn't make it right. It's just, it's been going on for a lot of years, and you know, it's nice to see that a coach who's had enough just stands up and says, you know what, my team and my staff have worked too hard for this, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Next part of this is that if you can send the 18-year-old point guard out or the 18-year-old quarterback out to talk with the media, why can't a 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old basketball official answer questions from the media as to what they saw in a play?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't understand. I'll never understand that. You know, why can't that be? You know, why, you know, there's no, you can answer, but limit the questions to 5 questions, whatever. I don't care. But they should be making themselves available, because obviously that impacted the game. That, again, doesn't mean that Maryland wouldn't have gone on to win the game anyway.
Right.
But the fact is that it impacted the game in a big way.
Yeah, because that part's always bothered me. I mean, you know, after the Ohio State game, there were so many questions. Well, the questions dealt around the third group and not the other two groups that are on the field, and a pool reporter went in.
Right.
Well,
The football, yeah, I'm sorry. I was losing you for a second. I was thinking you were talking basketball. Right, the football game, sure.
Right. I mean, and that's where the questions were. And it's okay. I mean, you know, and John O'Neill can answer the questions any way he wants, but I don't understand why. You know, maybe limiting the number of questions is fine, because you don't want to turn it into some sort of redundant Donnybrook.
Right.
But they're adults.
Yes. Yes.
Am I wrong on this?
No. Tell me what you saw.
Right.
And if it doesn't match what everybody else saw, okay, fine. But at least we know what you saw, that you called that play. And it, Steve, you've seen, you know, hundreds of more Penn State basketball games than I have. But it reminded me of the Greg Bartram call against Indiana at Rec Hall in 93.
Right.
That it was just, how do you, you know, the whistle blows, and I'm there covering the game, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, it's a foul in Indiana, and, you know, Bartram's going to get a chance to shoot free throws. And it's an offensive foul? That, it you know, 7,000 people in the building saw what the referee saw, but they didn't. The referee saw something else, and it's just, it's mind-boggling to me.
In fact, they never even announced the foul that night.
No, they didn't. You're right.
I remember specifically the play, because in shoot-around, it was the last thing that Bruce ran in shoot-around. The last thing was that spot, except I think Carter was taking the ball out about 10 feet into the backcourt, and in shoot-around, he had him right at the midcourt stripe. So he breaks two guys one way, one back, and then Bartram to the bucket. Well, Elton Carter's the guy throwing the ball in. Bang, fake left, through right, and I think it was Reynolds grabbed him by the shirt. I mean, grabbed it, and Bartram reached out, got the ball, warded off the hand, kept going. And I called it on the air as basket counts and a foul.
Oh, absolutely. I wrote it down as that. I could not believe that the basket's wiped off and that he was charged with an offensive foul. It just, but, you know, that's what I mean. I don't, you know, you're in a situation there. Penn State, first season in the league, Indiana, and Bob Knight, number one in the country. And did they get the benefit of the doubt? Well, they got more than the benefit of the doubt. You know, I was flipping back and forth between Villanova, Butler, and Duke, Syracuse Saturday before the Penn State game. Same thing, game, and I'm not Jim Boeheim has gotten calls over the years. I'm not going to say that they've been unfairly treated. But the game is on the line. Syracuse goes on a fast break, and one of the Duke guards grabs Trevor Cooney around the waist with two hands, and there's no call. Like, what are they seeing? I don't, like, I don't get it. I'm just not sure what these officials are seeing. If they're just letting, hey, let's let them play. Well, no, you know, there's a point there, right? You don't want to just call the whistle on every possession, but my goodness, the call Saturday at the Jordan Center was just, puzzling, at least puzzling.
Yeah, I'm getting concerned. I always get concerned at this time of the year because of the number of games that are being worked.
Yeah.
Like anything, you travel, you do it, mm-hmm. And that's, I think the NCAA tournament usually is well officiated. Well, why is that? Because they're in the same spot for a weekend and work two games.
Yeah.
The rest.
Yeah, they're not working a game every night, you know, and traveling to four different states in 4 days. Right.
Hey, one other quick question.
Sure.
It's on a totally different topic. But something I'm going to address a little bit later in the show. And that is the Pac-12 has put out from their presidents about mm-hmm. freshman eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they brought up in part the NBA, you know, mm-hmm. 19-year-old, one-year rule.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought on that? Because we've gone with freshman eligibility now for four decades.
Yeah. I actually like the rule, especially in basketball.
Yeah,
I think the one-and-done rule has hurt not only college basketball, it's hurt the NBA, too.
Right, I agree.
The product is not as good as it used to be. Maybe I'm sounding like an old-timer here, but I just don't see... It's just not... The quality's not the same. In college basketball, the one-and-done, and even allowing high schoolers... Well, you know, you can allow high schoolers... The rare high schoolers that can play in the NBA, I understand that. You know, okay, fine. And you don't want to prevent that from happening. But I think freshman ineligibility, you build up, a kid adjusts to school, some kids don't. You know, some kids are there just to try to get to the NBA. Mm-hmm. But we all know the percentages of people making the NBA and making the NFL and making Major League Baseball, and let's go down the list, are very slim. So what it does, I think, and especially with the way some of these kids are treated, the superior kids, the LeBron Jameses, the you know, the Kevin Durants, if the rule is in, sure, go to the NBA. You got it. That allows them to do that.
Right.
But there are so many kids out there who every kid on every Division I roster thinks they're an NBA player. Well, that's obviously not the case. And this kind of brings them down to earth. You got to stay in school for a year and then play, and then you get to play. And then, you know, then if you want to leave after your sophomore year, okay, maybe, you know, but you're older, you know, everything. You're going to be a better player. You know, I think it's good. Maybe I'm like a voice in the dark here, mm-hmm. but I actually think it would be a good rule, and I have no problem with it.
I like the baseball rule. And that's
yes,
where
I like that the best. Yeah.
Where, hey, look, you want to sign on to high school? Good. But if you go to college, you have to go for 3 years.
Yeah. But I think that what they've got to be careful with the conferences, the NCAA, whoever, are the legal ramifications of this. And I think with the freshman ineligible rule, you're not really preventing anybody from making a living, because you can go on. In high school, kids could go on and go to the NBA.
Right.
And you're just, you know, you have to play by imposing this. You know, you're keeping the kid, you're not eliminating scholarships. Right. You're not preventing kids from getting opportunities. Right. I like it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah, my thought would be D'Angelo Russell.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You want to go to the NBA out of high school? Go ahead.
Yeah.
But if
yeah.
if you want to go to college, you got to spend 3 years at Ohio State.
Yeah, I would like to see the 3-year rule too, but I don't know.
Oh, the Players Association won't do it. You and I both know, and they're actually the impediments. The Players Association, not the league.
Yeah, yeah. So you know that's where we're at now, and you know and the NCAA. Right. That's a good point. You brought up an excellent point. It's not the NCAA. It's the NBA.
Right.
Who made this rule? And what the NCAA can only do, or the conferences, this is their only option in the situation, is to make freshmen ineligible. So I'll be interesting to see how this all plays out.
Rich, always a pleasure. Always enjoy the talks. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Steve. Good talking to you, too.
And that's Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Kevin Herr's complete analysis of the interview in a moment. As we continue, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Insuring your business is serious stuff. You don't need gimmicks or cutesy mascots or punchlines. You certainly don't want red tape. You just want the right coverage at the right price. We're as serious about insuring your business as you are about running it. Selective. Response is everything.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Trust the Purdy's with all of your insurance needs because they know every great rate they can get you, the right coverage that you need. And not only that, the trust factor, the single most important part, entrenched. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Kevin's driving another new vehicle this week.
We're featuring the 2016 Kia Sorento, the new redesigned 2016 Sorento. 5,000 pounds of towing capacity with the V6 all-wheel drive. Has a new 2.0 turbo four-cylinder available, so you get a lot of power and get a little bit more gas mileage. And the new redesign has a larger interior space, and it also is a lot quieter and smoother ride too. What they did, one of the things they did was they made the doors a little longer top to bottom, so it wraps around. And you know how the door jams usually get dirty this time of year from just the outside snow and stuff and salt and stuff coming in? Well, this doesn't, because the doors actually get a little bit longer, and it also seals off the door in the interior a little bit more for less road noise. So check out the 2016 Kia Sorento, the newly redesigned, just came on the lot, and we have pictures and information available at Kevin Herr on Twitter and on my Facebook page as well, and we'll be talking more about it throughout the week. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 of 15, Hummel's Wharf.
So there you go. A lot to talk about on this topic. And, you know, you saw the call. And again, please remember, these are people that are working hard. Officiating is an extremely difficult job. Extremely. Do you want to get the call right? Of course he wants to get the call right. He doesn't want to be in the position where we're talking about it today. Have some common sense about that. Put yourself in his shoes. Did he make a mistake? Did he get it wrong? Yeah. Did he potentially swing the game? May have. We'll never know. Because you don't know. And again, you know, does Maryland come down and hit a couple threes? Does Penn State hit a couple free throws and convert out of that situation? I don't know. Do they go the, you know, but Jordan Dickerson would still be in the game, and defensively that would have been a big difference. So we don't know how the final minute and 50 plays out without that call. Or if it's called correctly. How about that? They're heavily scrutinized by the league after every game. Please do not think there ever goes, okay, Maryland won, great, good, we'll move on. Great win for the Big Ten. Helped out a lot. Good job, guys. No. They immediately get cut-ups after every game. Immediately. Rick Boyajis has that in the office, just like Bill Corollo does in football. Because the integrity of the game is critical to them. They don't want to be in this situation. Was Patrick Chambers right to say something? Yes. He needs to defend his program. He needs to defend his players. Will it cost him? Yes. And I understand where the Big Ten's coming from, because they need to protect the integrity of the officials, and they can't have people popping off after every game about officials on something or anything. I got that part. Doesn't mean Patrick was wrong to say it. He was right to say it. You know, and you can walk this diplomatic tightrope all you want. Sometimes it's got to be diplomacy, but damned. Because your program and your players are more important than anything else, and you've got to make some points and get some people to zero in on what they're doing out there. The worst thing that an official can do on a play, in my opinion, is guess. You call only what you see. If you don't see it or you don't quite see it, you can't call it. So the worst thing you can do is guess or assume what happened. And I've always said that. But it's a very hard job, and they do get scrutinized constantly. It is a constant from the supervisor of officials in every league across the country. Contrary to what many fans believe, they get constantly scrutinized. But I will say this. Something like that happens, the three officials, or in football, the officials, should be made available to the media and not a pool reporter. If your 19-year-old quarterback has to go in front of the media after throwing three interceptions, why can't the 49-year-old official go out and explain why he did what he did? Limit it to not a pool reporter. I don't like that. Limit it to 3 to 5 questions max. Everyone knows you got 3 questions, right? And have them make a statement about what they saw and why they called it. Why is it everybody else that is surrounding in a stadium or an arena has to be accountable for what they do to the media?